Tribe Talk is supported in part by The Artist Evolution, a full-service marketing group and home of our podcast studio. Visit theartistevolution.com for more information and to receive a one-minute marketing consultation for your business.
Welcome to Tribe Talk, the bi-monthly podcast by Tribe of Women. I'm Amy Robinson, founder of Tribe of Women. During each episode, I'll be joined by members of my tribe as we hear from guest speakers and powerful women who connect to our mission to establish cultures of women, supporting women, and recognizing more good men. We will also tell stories of you, our listeners, working in your communities to support your tribes and to answer your questions about how to grow the tribe of women together. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get started.
Welcome. I'm Laurie Marshall, your co-host with Tribe of Women founder, Amy Robinson. Hey, Amy.
Hey, Laurie. Thank you so much for being here today. We are on a more limited summer podcast schedule, but it's always a challenge to keep everything balanced. And I say balanced in air quotes.
Yeah.
Especially during the summer months. I like to say the juggle is real.
Preach it, sister. We've been talking about it quite a bit online and in real life, right? And have a recent blog post even about how to lean into our tribes during the summer months.
Yes. And now that we have the podcast underway, we're upping our blog post game because we have so much wisdom of women to share. And I feel like we're evolving daily. So I want to take a moment and encourage everyone to visit our website, tribeofwomen.com, and our social media channels frequently.
You say that we have a summer schedule going on, but we've launched retail products and partnerships recently. You're almost through our online summer coaching series, and we have several live Tribe Talk events lined up for the fall.
Very good points. I think we're pretty good at integrating work and life and creating space, but we're also very fast growing, and I love seeing what's happening as a result. I think that we're finding ways to meet the need. Also, all the more reason that we need all of our tribes to help us keep going and flowing.
Right. Integration is one of the reasons I'm looking forward to our next guest.
Yes. We're always looking for people out there who are talking the talk and walking the walk. So you can only imagine when our Tribe Tips guest, Kim Rada of Ia Chica, mentioned the book Tripping the Prom Queen, The Truth About Women and Rivalry.
Yeah, I know. The little excerpt that I've read is really intriguing. I can't wait to read the rest.
It is. And researching this book and the author sent me on to a magical place where our guest, Susan Shapiro Barash, has been studying women in relationships to the tune of 13 books on the subject.
Wow.
And those titles alone of all of those books made me say, yes, this is it. And another Yes, This Is It conversation brought us today's Tribe Tips guest that everyone wants to stay tuned for after our interview with Susan. Lori Benson is a transformational coach helping women step up to their true power and is bringing us some self-love tips. She has a beautiful story and a practical approach to our listeners do not want to miss.
I'm really excited to get started, but first, I want to remind our listeners that the Tribe Talk podcast is now on Patreon, and if you are as excited as we are about our guests, we'd love for you to share that excitement in the form of whatever monthly amount of a contribution you can.
Yeah.
Just go to the podcast tab on our website, tribeofwomen.com, and click the button that says Become a Patron.
Oh, thank you for that, Lori. Yes, love has and continues to fuel our energy engines, but it takes more than that to continue bringing forth content.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we get started now?
Let's do.
Okay. Today, it is my pleasure to introduce Susan Shapiro Barash. Susan is a prolific writer of both nonfiction and fiction books. Her focus is gender studies at the writing department of Marymount Manhattan College, and she also teaches creative nonfiction at the Writing Institute at Sarah Lawrence, from which she is an alumnus. As a recognized gender expert, Susan has been featured from Huffington Post and Psychology Today to New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. She has appeared in magazines that include Elle and Marie Claire and appeared on television shows Today Show and Good Morning America and radios NPR and Sirius. And that's not even the entire list. So we are so happy to have you here, Susan. Welcome to Tribe Talk.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be talking with you.
We're excited to have you. So, Susan, we've spoken on the phone and have established that we have a long love affair ahead of us. And one of the things that we talked about is how you have an immense body of work that speaks to the exact challenges that women face when it comes to relationships between one another. And that's be it mother-in-laws, sisters, daughters, friends. So can you tell us a little bit about how you came to this being the focus of your work and what you've learned through the process and your hopes for what others are gaining from it?
I think that I've long been intrigued by the faces women wear versus how they really feel. Different social strata, ethnicity from all across the country and, you know, big cities, small towns. Just the idea that we struggle with societal expectations. So actually when I was a young bride, I thought maybe, just married, that I needed a book on my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And I went to the bookstore and there was no such thing. And I was a second wife, although I was married very young. And he was older and had been married before. And there was no book on second wives. And And then for a time, I lived, when my children were young, very small, I lived in Connecticut in what I would call a suburb. And I kept hearing whisperings, even on the commuter train, about female infidelity. And again, when I looked for a book on that, I couldn't find it. So my early projects are totally a reflection of what I wanted to know about in terms of how women felt and what they did, and I couldn't find it. And then it turned out to be a full-time career. Just the idea that women really struggle to get what they need in relationships as sisters, as wives. I've done a lot of research on the role of wife in America. And of course, what we're talking about in terms of tribes of women, which is how women treat each other and why that is set up within us and also culturally.
Yeah, I can tell from your books that it's been kind of an evolution and a journey, and it comes from a personal place, but I think that that's the beauty of you telling your own story or kind of through your own lens and your own experiences is that that's so often a common experience. And if you're experiencing it, the chances of someone else going through it are huge.
That's so true. And what I found in my research is that a very disparate group of women, women of all ages and stages in their lives, have similar issues. So it really doesn't matter if you have a master's degree or you haven't finished high school. If you're struggling with your daughter, mm-hmm. you're struggling with your daughter. If you have issues with your mother, or your sister, or other women at work, or female friends. I'm very interested in female friendships, mm-hmm. and I've done a lot of research and writing on that. It really, these are emotional issues. It really doesn't matter where you live or how much money you earn or how educated you are or what your religion or ethnicity is. The way that women feel is strikingly similar. If you're unhappy in your marriage, it really doesn't matter where you live or what you earn.
Well, I think that one of the things that, and we've been talking on the phone, and that's part of the reason that we know that we are, for lack of a better term, on the same page, all over the pages of your book. And in your research, what role have you found that self-love or self-acceptance plays in women's relationships with each other or in general?
Well, I think it's general, and I think it's also, you know, within the female bonds, friendships, sisters-in-law. If you don't feel good about yourself, you will not choose wisely in terms of friends. You will not make the right decisions in terms of behavior, and you will not choose the right partner. And until you really believe in yourself, and instead of competing in an unhealthy way, you know, healthy competition is a whole other topic. But if women are rivalrous, if you think your friend or your sister-in-law or your female colleague has something more than you have, then you need to work on yourself instead of just feeling as if there's some magical theft, as if she got it and thus you can't. And we are raised in a culture, and Amy, we talked about this, where there's not enough pie or the perception of not enough pie, and it's very detrimental. It will hurt our daughters. It will hurt us. It will hurt us whether we're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70. It's really perpetuated the, what was so striking to me about female friendships that work are that they worked a long time ago. The kind of friend you are at 35 is probably the kind of friend you are at 65. So, and when you choose a friendship that's unhealthy, you have to ask yourself, you haven't evolved with your own self-acceptance and self-esteem to the point, are you still choosing unhealthy friendships, unhealthy love matches? We have to look at ourselves. We have to really admit there's a problem and be introspective at the same time.
So do you think that that when women make those changes in themselves, then that can evolve those relationships or cause them to choose better? That's what I feel like I've been having happen in my life.
It's absolutely correct. If you can face yourself, work on yourself, be honest with yourself, then you ask for the kind of respect that you deserve in friendships and in work relationships with other women. And it even goes with the mother-daughter bond. It's even, you know, I've spoken, I think Amy and I talked about this, the working mothers being very separate from the non-working mothers, as if this decision, there are only two decisions, maybe part-time mother, working mothers could be the third group. But what we're looking at is, you know, a kind of not only unacceptance of others, which is always questionable. Why would you fear others? Why not embrace everyone? Right. And it really goes to how you feel about yourself. Yes. It really starts with the self.
It does. Everything. Yes. All I have for that is an amen.
Yes.
Right. It's true. It's really true, but it's a hard lesson. It doesn't always come to us so easily. You know, when I wrote a book about women's choices in partners, I found that so many women described their failed marriages or, you know, or long-term monogamous relationships that had failed with someone very similar to the boy they had a crush on when they were 15, and it didn't work out either. So we have to really look at what we're doing right and wrong. We have to really self-reflect in order to achieve better relationships.
Yes, yes. Well, and I think that one of the things that you touched on briefly is a little bit about that healthy competition. And so tell us a little bit about how and why competition manifests in women's relationships with one another and kind of the difference between healthy and not healthy competition.
Well, when I did my research for Tripping the Prom Queen, The Truth About Women and Rivalry, and conduct an ongoing research since the book was published, I find that women are taught culturally and by their mothers, and then oftentimes it's to different degrees within your own nature. So it's nature and nurture. Mm-hmm. The idea that we somehow need to compete. So sometimes, you know, even in junior high, and then maybe when you're 45 years old, you want a male, because your friend has him. Maybe it has nothing to do with him, or you want that life because everyone seems to have it, or you covet something because it's held up to you as a goal. And what is important is to be healthy enough to say, do I really want it? Does it really work for me? But if not, we're competing also. Even in the workplace, and Amy, we have talked about this, women are set up to compete only with one another. So how healthy can it be if the competition is kind of sequestered and women feel like there can only be one woman who's the boss or one woman who's second in command? So there's really not enough opportunity for women in a patriarchal culture, and that's what feeds the unhealthy competition.
Well, and a lot of that is just like we were talking about the size of the pie, and we're talking about scarcity, and it's a culture of scarcity when really there is abundance, and so it's that perception of finite resources, and it really is cultural and kind of a norm that we're following. And if we can kind of rise above and look at it for what it really is, then we can start making those choices. And I think that that's, you know, and another kind of a cultural term that's being tossed around right now is that FOMO, or the fear of missing out, you know,
yes.
that concept of, you know, we go on social media and everybody is doing all of these things that we think that we're not doing, but we're not really looking at the reality of it and the fact that we're all having struggles. We're all challenged with things. And when we talk about, you know, the culture of high school and the fact that 15, 35, or 65, that when we participate in those cultures as we grow and we don't pull ourselves out or away from it and see it for the abundance that it is, then we tend to go there and do that.
Well, there's no question that that's true. And until we admit that there's a problem and admit that we're culturally fed and encouraged to compete with each other or to be envious, or the darkest part is to be jealous, then we don't really work on ourselves or understand our individuality. So we're all female, we're in it together, but within that, there are so many parts of it that just belong to each of us. And so you can have a friend who's very different, and that's just great. You know, in my book, Toxic Friends, and for that study, I interviewed women who talked about being mirroring friends. That was a section of the book. The idea, well, we're still single, and we still have these high-powered jobs. Some of our friends at 35 or 40 have left and opted out despite their, you know, degrees and great jobs, and have, you know, moved on, have a baby or two, but we're still together. We can't really relate to them. Meanwhile, the friend just moved on, as they're describing it, is only friendly with the other new mothers in the new town. Mm-hmm. So the theory of homogamy, like with like, and I encourage women to be friendly because they relate to one another and not just because they're in it together in that, in a very specific, you know, time and phase of life.
Mm-hmm.
Found what's really interesting in my research for Tripping the Prom Queen was that 90% of women of different social strata claim that envy and jealousy toward other women colors their lives. And 80% of them told me, and remember, these are young women to, you know, middle age, 80% said that they've encountered jealousy in other females since grade school.
Mm-hmm.
And 90% of the women I spoke with said in very diverse careers report that competition in the workplace is primarily between women. And so I thought that was really interesting. And then 65% said that they were jealous of a best friend or a sister. So, you know, we really have to work on the solidarity of it. And as you say, the tribes of women.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, 70% of the women I interview tell me that they're familiar with the concept of women stealing a friend's husband, lover, boyfriend, a job.
Right.
So, you know, this is tough stuff. And
yes.
We have to really feel like we're entitled to every option in order to not feel as these women describe.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you're talking about, you know, we have to face it in order to do anything about it. We have to kind of bring it into the light. And I think that that is so true. And I have struggled with this, and I think women struggle with it very broadly. We feel like if we admit that this is happening, that, you know, we're condemning us all. And the reality is that we have to look at it for what it is in order to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's vital. And I wonder if, and kind of on the other side, and at the same time, in the healthy way, in the healthy competition that we can have among each other, I do find that women, we connect differently, we build friendships differently, we communicate differently, and in a very beautiful way. And so in recognizing our challenges, then that just leads to embracing what we're good at and how to do that. And so tell us a little bit about some of those, what you've uncovered in the positive ways that women tribe, that women come together and help and support each other when they are having healthy competition and healthy friendships and healthy relationships.
Well, when it comes to female friendship, in my study, I found that it's oftentimes when someone is in a period of distress or a period of great joy and accomplishment that she learns who her true friends are. Mm-hmm. And what was so fascinating to me is how many women said they would have not pegged or named the ones who ended up coming forward and really being there for them.
Yes.
And the ones who failed them were quite shocking too. And that goes to, of course, who the friend really is, and when life is just zooming along, as it sometimes does, you don't really know it. But for the most part, if we have healthy competition, we have to have a new attitude, mm-hmm. one that is overt about what we've been taught and why we just so instinctively end up being jealous or rivalrous when we really don't have to be that way. So we have to face it. And as I said earlier, we have to improve ourselves, work on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think what's very significant is the idea that if your friend sits down and says, you know, I just got divorced, I'm so happy, I just met a guy, I'm so happy, I just had a baby, I just got a great relocation, you know, and instead of saying super while you're sort of secretly seething, mm-hmm. just, wow, that was very proactive. What do I need to shake up?
Yeah.
What would work for me? And also to really hear what your friend said, yeah. to really listen as a friend and to be empathetic without worrying about yourself.
Yes.
To feel good enough about yourself. It all goes to what you first asked me about self-acceptance.
Mm-hmm. It does come to that core.
And definitely reaching out to someone who is doing the things that you want to be doing. Why wouldn't you? Instead of looking at it with a jealous angle, think of it as a way to engage that person as a mentor or a confidant. I mean, mm-hmm. that just makes so much sense to me.
Well, and it sounds to me
I think the trust is such a big issue for women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, and you know, even the media, if we think of TV series, if we think of news stories, women are constantly compared to one another for the glittering prizes,
yeah,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
For beauty, wardrobe, it sounds so superficial, but these are very much in the ether and in our society. So, you know, accomplishments include children if you want them, husbands if you want them, great careers, youth. You know, we live in a society filled with ageism and lots of judgments that come with it. And I think that until we really understand that this is what we're up against, and again, what we've been taught by our mothers. You know, what was so striking to me in my research was how much a mother really teaches her daughter to be competitive or not in a healthy way, and jealous or not. Was your mother, was she jealous? Did she think life passed her by? Mm-hmm. Or was she someone who was very generous and very confident? Because this is part of it.
Yeah. And let's talk about that a little bit, because I think, you know, we all have the cultures that we were raised in, the cultures that we live in, and those outside influences of media. And then and we all have, a history of family in one form or another. So how are women, what we talk about is how do we lead? How do we tribe it forward to others? And motherhood is one of those places,
one of
the biggest places. But how has it changed over the past, I'm just going to throw out 40 years just because, you know, hashtag the 60s. and how has that affected over time, kind of how we lift one another through society's challenges and toward equality in relationships with from our mothers to our workplaces, just to society at large?
Well, I think that, you know, the 60s is such a pivotal time in America, probably the most tumultuous decade with the Civil Rights Movement and the Vietnam War and the Women's Rights Movement and the bra burning and the advent of the pill. And we look at it and we look at the march to the workplace and the idea of taking a hard-earned degree and then actually making money in a capitalistic society from it. And what I think is so, you know, what was so unexpected when we think of the feminist movement, which was just the second wave of feminism, which was just brilliant, and is some often misunderstood by young women today, which is a whole other topic. But, yes. But yeah. The idea that, you know, Gloria Steinem and the late Betty Friedan and Germaine Greer and all of the other leaders going forward really wanted women to be able to earn money. But what they did not anticipate, as I see it, is the idea that there would be so much tokenism that there would not be a dollar paid for a dollar's worth of work. You know, that it would be to today, it's 78 cents on the dollar for women. And so it would not be equal pay for equal work. And then there would be sexism. So in forging ahead and doing something so magnificent, there was, I guess, an unanticipated amount of issues that would come about, and they prevail, and it has to do with the patriarchal culture and the slow adjustment of men. But the problem is not only that the men were not really willing to relinquish everything, obviously, you know, to really be partners in this, but what it did to women. So it pitted them against one another in the workplace in a way, as I said, because of tokenism. And it also took away, again, trust. Because if you're working so hard, I think I said to Amy recently that, you know, mentoring is such an amazing concept and such an important concept. But if you speak to women who are maybe 55 or 65 today, they might say, well, no one mentored me, but no one was there to mentor them. Yes. And then if you talk to a woman who's maybe 35, she might say, I don't really need to be mentored. But that's a shame because mentee mentoring, you know, mentor-mentee is a brilliant way for women to move ahead.
It is. And I think that there is a generation of us who, I know I did, walked into the workplace thinking that it had all been done. And, you know, all the hard work had been done. And then I got there and went, oh, wait a minute. There's still a lot of work to do. And there's a, you know, a kind of a metaphor that I use of that, you know, we've been walking comfortably in the path that's been blazed for us, but the weeds are growing up behind us. And so to turn around and bring others up, and there's, you know, one of the things that you were mentioning was, well, you know, nobody was there for me, and kind of that almost, it's almost a hazing ritual. Like, well, I had to do that. I had to go through that. So you have to as well. As opposed to this continued blazing of a trail, so that we can evolve and keep growing and keep moving forward, and so I think that that's very important.
It's really important that women support each other in every way, mothers to daughters, aunts to nieces, workplace relationships, teachers. To be models, you know, role models, and to teach everything we know. I think it's the only way. I think that's why I loved when we first were in touch and I thought about Tribes of Women, because I think it really empowers us to look at it that way.
Yes, and I think that, you know, one of the things that you said earlier also was kind of this pitting against each other. And what better way to keep women from evolving than just to keep us fighting among ourselves, right?
Yeah. But I think that the reason it happens still is because we live in a society that stereotypes both women and men, females and males. So I researched, in some of my research on mothers and daughters and for female friendships, I researched how there are types of females from so early on. So if you talk to a first grader, she could probably point out the wallflower, the athlete, the beauty, the nerd, the sort of it girl in her class. And when I wrote Tripping the Prom Queen, I asked women of all different ages if they had felt typecast or stereotyped early on. And a few of them talked about breaking free of the stereotype and really coming into their own, and how incredibly meaningful it was.
Well, I do think that we're getting there. And, and you've written the books.
Yep.
And we're out here trying to walk the walk.
We have to get the word out. Knowledge is power.
It is. And one of the things that I asked you when we talked earlier was about the response to your books. And one of the things that you said is, you know, it just not enough people were reading them. And it wasn't, I mean, not that not enough people were reading them, but the fact that they're out there. But now we need to do something with them and about it. And so that's why I'm excited about the potential for future collaboration with you through us as one of the actionable channels to this end.
Yes, fantastic.
So I'm very excited about that. Well, before we get to our last question, tell us about your latest book and projects and how people can find you.
Oh, okay, thank you. Well, having published 13 nonfiction women's issue books, I told my agent and editor, both female, that I wanted to write a novel and that I wanted to incorporate all that I had researched, you know, the role of mother and daughter, the idea that a mother might identify with one daughter more than another, the vicissitudes of marriage, the role of wife, what we give up and what we get from being a wife, if we're honest, I guess the price of marriage for men. And what career means to women, what female rivalry means to women, very important part of my novel. And I wanted to, and also the typing, the prototyping. So my book is my latest book, and I have another book coming out next year, a novel, but the novel that came out recently is called Between the Tides. And I got to have a pen name, which was thrilling since I don't love my real name.
You get to be anybody that you want.
It was so great. They said, we'd like a pen name. I said, I have it. They said, you have it. We could talk about this. I said, no need. I've been dreaming about it. So my name is, so Between the Tides is by Susanna Marin, which I really like.
I love it. I love it.
And it's really, you know, it's a commercial / literary endeavor. And it's, you know, a story of two women who reconnect and had a rivalry from many, many years ago when they were teenagers. So that's, you know, the latest. And I have two websites, SusanShapiroBarish.com and SusannaMarin.com.
Excellent. Wonderful. Well, I'm excited. I think that that's a wonderful another door to come in and shed light on all of the work and the research that you've done. Well, we are very much looking forward to working with you and to bringing the walk to your writing. And you've been able to tribe it forward to women everywhere, and we're excited to help you move that work forward even further. But now it's time for our final question that we ask all of our guests, which is, why do you believe in Tribes of Women?
Actually, Tribes of Women stands for everything I believe in. That's why I was so struck by it. It's how it should be. I believe in diverse women coming together to have the best experiences, to respect one another, to learn from one another, and to move it forward. So the work that you're doing is very meaningful to me.
Wonderful. We couldn't have said it better ourselves. Thank you, Susan, so
much. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
Tribe Tips is sponsored by ModThink, your results-driven digital marketing group. Find them at ModThink.com, ModThink.com.
What a great interview with Susan, and a segue into our Tribe Tips segment about self-love.
That's where it all begins. But before we dive in, and speaking of self-love, we want to tell our listeners about our online coaching series. It's a 21-day challenge that we have quarterly. There are no geographic limitations. We have women from around the world participating, and it's full of personal and professional growth, beginning with self-love.
Yes. It has been an amazing experience getting to interact personally with women everywhere and them with one another. We are honing and growing and adapting the series with everything we're learning from women everywhere. So we hope that the past participants will come back and share with friends and that others will join us.
Speaking of coaching.
Yes. You don't have to wait for the coaching series to have a coaching moment right now. Today, our Tribe Tip guest is Lori Benson. Lori brings the Awakened Woman program to women everywhere. She has been there, done that, and through her experiences, she's helping women step into their full potential and embrace our true power. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you. It's great to be here with you guys.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. Lori, one of the things you talk about is how sharing your story and journey opens other women to share theirs, and is one of the reasons that I and Tribe of Women connect with you and the work that you're doing so deeply. Can you tell us a little bit more about that story and the work you're doing?
Absolutely. You know, I think there are a couple levels to my story, as there are probably for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
My work kind of became more focused as I became more self-aware. And that self-love really, that journey of self-love, I would say, really kicked into high gear for me a few years ago in my early 40s when I had a memory of something that had happened to me in my teenage years. And I realized the impact of that throughout my relationships, interactions, even just daily conversations. So I kind of took a deep dive myself into what I needed to do to get back, or maybe even find for the first time, really that centered self-love in myself. And that journey has evolved into the Awakened Woman program and kind of guiding other women around the country and around the world, actually, through this program or opportunity, I guess is a better word, to really find that centered self-love within ourselves and then move through the world in that manner.
I love it so much. I like that you call it transformational coaching. That's a huge word. And I think that it's so difficult to open ourselves up to other people, but it really does start with opening ourselves up to ourselves sometimes.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about kind of your coaching process and what role that self-love plays.
So it's I think it's somewhat difficult for us as women to step into in the beginning because you have to be selfish.
Yes, heaven forbid.
No. And you have to really focus on yourself. And recognize first, so we kind of sit and first realize where our stories and our traumas are living in our body and what that feels like. So we do a lot of body work, just sitting though, not necessarily even moving, and raising our level of self-awareness. So what does that feel like in our bodies? Where does it live? And then working on increasing our awareness during the day to see when we're moving into that space of tension or discomfort. And how often we're actually engaging in conversation or responding to something from that place of tension. Mm-hmm. The second part of the process is then finding that place of joy and happiness within our body. And actually, it's really easy for us to recognize the first part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of us, when we sit and try and find where we feel that joy and freedom, it's tough because that's the part that we kind of push down. So then the trick is to move from that space of tension and anxiety and all the different words that we come up with for that feeling into that space of joy and freedom and watch how the universe opens things up for us and how things begin to shift when our conversations come from that centered self-love.
I did a body scan myself recently and had some pain in my knee and I named it a frustration that I'm dealing with. And as I let go of it during that session, the rest of the day, it did not bother me as much. And it was very strange.
That's amazing.
It was, I thought, well, there it is. That's what's supposed to happen. And it was kind of freaky.
Yeah.
It's pretty incredible.
It is. And that body, that mind-body connection is so powerful. And we, you know, bringing that awareness, I love that you have awareness throughout your coaching, because it is just that consciousness, it's that connection. Mm-hmm. And we're so naturally aware of what's going on around us and to other people, and we feel like, you know, giving that away and being connected in that way is the biggest gift. But it's so much more powerful when we're connected to ourselves, mm-hmm. and then connect with others and give that gift forward.
Absolutely. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I just was agreeing.
Do women come to you with specific issues that they want to hash through during your coaching series, or is it? What do you find? Is it more of a general, this sounds like something I'd love to do, or do they come with something really on their mind?
You know, that right there is kind of the difference between life coaching and transformational coaching. So life coaching is more focused on like, hey, I want a new job, or more of an issue, more of like a concrete goal. Mm-hmm. And the work that I can do that as well, but the work that I'm really loving with women, the transformational coaching, most of the women come to me and say, something's just not right anymore. Mm-hmm. Something feels off, and I don't necessarily know what it is. Mm-hmm. And that is difficult. It's difficult for them not knowing what they're looking for necessarily to step into the space. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it also makes it really beautiful, because then it often does, you know, end up where it's like, oh, hey, maybe I do want to shift the mm-hmm. work that I'm doing, and it grows from there.
I love it.
Yeah.
So this is our tribe tip segment. And so one of the things that we love to give our listeners is just a little taste of people and organizations that are out there supporting women. And but we love to leave them with some very practical steps that women can go out and do right now. Today. And since self-love has been a huge theme throughout the podcast today, what tips toward self-love would you be able to give somebody to walk out and do right now?
So I would say that the biggest tools that we have immediately accessible are our breath and our ability to pause. Mm-hmm. So I think we often react and engage, and then it leaves us feeling not so great about ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you can take the time to pause and bring that breath into your belly and feel the relaxation and the release that gives you, and then engage in conversation. And I would even say to start to find where that happiness and joy lives in your body. You know, take some time. If you have some time today, go and find a quiet space by yourself and give yourself 5 minutes and close your eyes and relax and find that deep breath in your body. And then try and bring in a memory, something that's made you feel really happy, brought you real joy. And see if you feel that. Breathe that in. Remember what it looked like and felt like and smelled like. And see if you feel a stirring anywhere. And if you don't, that's okay. You know, but then as you go through your day, you start to recognize, I'm smiling. Do I feel that anywhere? No, cool. Okay, move on. And start to practice that kind curiosity. You know, where does that live in my body? And when you find that, there's an incredible freedom that comes along with that.
I love that kind curiosity.
That is great.
Kind curiosity about ourselves.
Right.
Yes, absolutely.
And this works so well with the interview that we just did with Susan, because she talked about how the competition between women so often can be lessened and solved if women step back and learn how to love themselves, accept themselves. So this is a perfect ending to that. So Laurie, where can people find you to continue their journey with you past our little tips?
Yeah, they can find me at lauriebensoncoaching.com.
That's wonderful. Lori, thank you so much for being with us today, and we are excited to continue our journey with you. I know that we'll do work together in the future, but we were just really happy to be able to highlight you today and the work that you're doing, and thank you for the gift that you gave us.
Yeah, thank you, ladies. It's been a great time hanging out with you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lori. We'll talk to you soon.
Do you believe in Tribes of Women? Join the movement in our newsletter at tribeofwomen.com and be the first to learn about upcoming podcast guests, product releases, events, and giveaways. Find, subscribe, and rate the Tribe Talk podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, and other major platforms, and share it with your tribe. Then follow us for inspiration, information, events, and more on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram using @tribeofwomen. This is Tribe of Women.
Lorraine Mosier,
Courtney Lawless,
Lori Marshall,
and Amy Robinson. Thanks for listening.